I'm Calvin Johnson Jr., and you listen to the Huddle and Flow podcast.
Well, all right, we're here at the Huddle and Flow podcast, brought to you by Intuit, the proud makers of TurboTax, Mint, and QuickBooks. I am Steve White here with my brother, Jim Trotter. We are two-thirds of the Howard U mob. Our producer, Thomas Warren, on the ones and the twos. He completes the puzzle. And Jim, we got a real interesting show today. Our guest, Arizona Cardinals GM, Steve Keim, been a little busy. Been a little busy signing folks. Now, some people think he's signing people who also have that AARP card that David Culley, the Houston Texans head coach, said that he flashes, but he's still got some productive players. We're talking about guys like Matt Prater and A.J. Green and J.J. Watt and Rodney Hudson. Those are guys who can still play.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me about what they're doing as well, people say they're all in now, but, you know, I can tell you a guy like Steve Keim is all in every year. You know, you want to win. And particularly when you've gone five straight years without, you know, reaching the playoffs. But if you talk to them privately, the way that they evaluate each of these individuals in terms of how they fit, what they can bring, and why they will be successful stands out to me. They're not just signing a name, and they're not just signing someone based on necessarily past production. They are truly breaking down how that person fits. So I'll give you, for instance, with A.J. Green, people say, oh, he's lost a step, he's not as productive, can't get off man as well as he used to. And the way that the Cardinals look at it is every receiver or every player over 30 starts to lose a step at some point. As we know, Father Time is undefeated. But you have to remember, A.J. Green was also typically matched up on a number one corner. Well, in Arizona, he's not going to be matched up on a number one corner. DeAndre Hopkins is. So now you have to ask yourself, can A.J. Green win against the number two corner? And they obviously feel very confident that he can. The other thing is he's such a great route runner and his hands are so good that he can still make plays even in tight coverage at that. And the other thing we know about Arizona is that they take care of their veterans. You know, you're playing warm weather on grass and they don't push those guys during the week. They try and manage their bodies to make sure they're effective on Sundays. So it's for some of those reasons when I hear people criticize Arizona and say they went to these players with AAP cards, I say, yeah, they may be a little older, but these guys have a specific plan on how these guys fit and why they believe it can be successful. It wasn't just going off of name or past accolades.
At the same time, Jim, I do think the fact that they started out so hot last year and then they really petered out, 2-5 down the stretch. You know, Kyler Murray hurt that shoulder, and we're going to ask Steve Keim about that, because when I saw Kyler Murray hurt the shoulder and he stopped running the ball, that's when their offense and just kind of their whole operation seemed to really slow down a little bit. But 8-8, I don't know if that's good enough. I mean, it's tough to make headway in this division. So I think they are signing these guys for at least, for what they can do, but they've got to get some short-term bounce. They have got to try to make headway. And to me, the toughest top-to-bottom division in the NFL.
No question, Steve. But what I would say to that as well is, remember, they lost 8 games, but 4 of those were by a touchdown or less. 3 of those are by a field goal. So if they make one kick, and I forgot which game it was, but if they make the kick, they're in the playoffs. That's how close it was, instead of losing a tiebreaker. So from my standpoint, they are not that far away. And early in the year, when they were healthy, they were a team that you had to deal with. So I do think these guys that they've signed can play. I do think that they will give them a bounce. And that's what's going to be so fascinating about this division. As you say, it's arguably the best in football. And I say arguably because I think, you know, the AFC East has gotten a lot better this offseason as well. And we know that in the AFC North, when you talk about a Baltimore, a Cleveland, a Pittsburgh,
right,
how that goes typically. So, but that's the NFL. And the one thing I'll say is, you know, Steve Keim is one of my favorite people to talk to because he gives it to you straight.
He does.
You know, he knows what he can say and what he can't say, but he's not BSing you and playing the deflection game and whatnot. If you ask him a question, he'll give you an honest answer. And I respect that about him.
Yeah. And let's get to him, Jim, because, you know, the one thing, you know, right, like right now we're seeing a lot of these teams talk about, hey, they got to move up to the top 5 or 6 to get some of these quarterbacks in the draft, and you know, Jets may move off of Darnold or whatever. He's done it, right? He had it with Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray. So I'm just real eager to hear his thought process about doing that, where we're seeing some teams kind of potentially mortgage the future for the unknown. So, all right, let's get to our guest, Steve Kahn. All right, Jim, now we're joined by our special guest, Arizona Cardinals GM, Steve Keim. And Steve, you know, you haven't been busy at all. I mean, about this past week, you've been sitting on your hands, you know, not doing any transactions or anything.
That's right. That's right. What an honor, guys. Two of my favorites. So appreciate you guys having me on.
Nah, let's do it, Steve. Look, let's get right to it.
Okay.
Everybody talks about being in win now mode. Mm-hmm. And I find that ironic because our team's in that mode every year.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great comment because I've heard that before, and you know, he's going for it. Shoot, I'm going for it every year. And it's you know, the players that we sign, maybe that's the presumption that people have, but I'm into acquiring good players who have great leadership skills, and that's what we feel like we did this offseason.
But at the same time, Steve. No, so at the same time, like you said, the players you signed, you know, you see some of the big name signings, J.J. Watt, Matt Prater, and Rodney Harrison, A.J. Green. They're in their 30s, okay? So in NFL players' years, they've got some tread on the tire, so to speak, or the tread's coming off the tire a little bit. So is it, though, is there a more of a sense of urgency because maybe their careers aren't going to be as long as Kyler's at this point? Kyler's got 10, 15 more years. These guys might have 2, 3, 4 more years. Is there more of a sense of urgency with these types of signings?
I don't think so. I really don't, Steve. I think it comes down to what were our offseason goals, and that was to become a more physical football team and to add more leadership to our locker room. And I think that when you watch all these guys, you know, J.J. Watt is still a disruptive player on tape. You know, A.J. Green, people seem to think that maybe he's lost a step. I mean, he's a guy that was targeted 112 times, I believe, last year. 38 of them were uncatchable balls. So he's a guy that, to me, can play the Z position for us, has great character, as you guys know. And I think he still has some stuff left in the tank. And to be able to add more weapons to this offense, I think, is something that excites us. And then Rodney Hudson. I mean, there's no doubt in my opinion that he's still one of the best centers in the NFL and is still playing at a high level.
Yeah, but don't overlook Prater either. I mean, when you look at it, 4 of your 8 losses were by a touchdown or less, 3 of them by a field goal. So
right. That's
a pretty significant signing for you, I would assume. Is that one you targeted going into free agency?
Yeah, 100%, Jim. And it was, you know, when you look at it analytically and you see all the games that are lost by 3 points or less and the way we lost those games last year, here now all of a sudden is one of the best clutch kickers in NFL history with the leg strength to boot. So no pun intended. But he is a guy that we targeted early on and are really excited about.
Steve, can you speak to the challenges of trying to build for today but also build for tomorrow? I mean, as Steve said, when you look at those 8 – I'm going to go with your top 8 signings this year. All of them this season are going to be 30 or older.
Right.
And a lot of people focus on age. How do you balance that with trying to win now but also not hurting yourself for tomorrow?
Yeah, that's a great question. And on a reduced cap by about $16 million. Right. As well, so it's tough, but having a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract does afford you those opportunities to be aggressive at other spots. But you do have to watch, and particularly the way you structure these contracts. A lot of times nowadays we're doing voided years, which creates dead space down the road. And hopefully, you know, in a year or two, we're paying Kyler Murray the kind of money that these elite quarterbacks are making. So it is a tough balance. But at the same time, I think with the way you allocate your money or the way you structure these contracts, if you have guys who are leadership or leaders and have great passion and bring those sort of things to your locker room, I think that you have to take those opportunities regardless of what your situation is.
Steve, you've had a taste of the Super Bowl, and the last time you guys were in the playoffs was the NFC Championship game. It's been 5 years since then. Can you speak to what that emotion is of playing at the pinnacle and now not being in that dance for 5 years? What is that emotion like?
Yeah, it's tough and it's humbling. I mean, you know, my first 5 years as a GM. We won over 50 games, you know, hired Bruce Arians. We traded for Carson Palmer, which was, I think somebody said, equivalent to a ham sandwich. And, you know, after the first couple of years, you think, I'm pretty good at this. And then, like I said, you hit this humbling point of your career where it's, not only you have to unfortunately let go of a coach and let go of a guy that you drafted with the 10th overall pick and redo things, so to speak, it's not fun. And, you know, you can get down on yourself and it's challenging, but you always got to continue to fight that deal, you know, internally more than anything. Just, you know, fight the fact that it's easy to get down on yourself, but you got to have the confidence and you got to have thick skin in this business. That's for sure.
What did you learn about yourself during that time?
You know, it's a great question. I've thought about it time after time. I think it's that more than anything, you have to really be honest with yourself and self-evaluation. You know, I think as humans, we tend to make excuses for ourselves or, for example, my kids. You know, you make excuses for your kids because you love them and you care. To be honest with yourself is pretty difficult. And I think that when you have the ability to look in the mirror and be blunt and truthful about yourself, good or bad, that is the only way in life that you can truly grow. And that's what I learned is to be honest with myself and say, this isn't good enough. And there's only one way to go, and that's to fix it.
So, Steve, and also in all your years being a general manager, of course, it's not just procuring talent, right? It's developing talent, developing culture. You talked about the guys you signed because you wanted to bring in some, you know, talented players, but also leaders.
Yes.
What is the culture of your locker room, though, to absorb imported leadership? Because a lot of locker rooms are like, hey, bro, you haven't been here. You can't come in here barking like that. But, you know, for your locker room, say, hey, J.J. Watt, people are going to come in here and listen to J.J. Watt, or they're going to come in here and listen to A.J. Green. Now, can you kind of explain balancing that dynamic and why you think your locker room was ready for that?
Yeah, and that's, you know, as I got to know A.J. or J.J., J.J. Watt, that is, he's a guy that, you know, you guys have both talked to him. I mean, he just exudes confidence and passion and is got – I think in this game leadership is an innate thing. You have it in you. It's natural. You know, you've heard guys try to be leaders in the past, and it doesn't come off authentic. I think there are obviously not as many leaders as you would love to have, guys that are just good football players, and they come to work and do their thing and go home. But then there are those guys that they come to work and you feel their presence. And that's what we felt with some of these guys, in particular J.J. And I know Rodney Hudson is another guy of great character as well.
Steve, how difficult is it when you have to part ways with a guy like Patrick Peterson, who has been everything for this organization in terms of being a pro while he was there? On the outside for us, you know, want to be general managers, it's easy because we don't have the relationships.
Yep.
We're not there day to day with that guy. For you, what is it like to have to part ways with a guy like that?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking over the weekend, you know, we go to high school and some of our best friends are guys that we spent 4 years with in high school or college, those 4 years. So I went to high school and I went to college with Pat Peterson, so to speak. So I have that relationship. And there's no decision that's been more difficult for me than within the first 10 days of being the general manager here. I had to release one of my best friends in life, Adrian Wilson, who is, you know, Ring of Honor. And Jim, you and I have talked about it. We both feel like he's a Hall of Famer. To have to tell him that his career in Arizona is no longer going to exist with the background that we had, I'm not going to lie to you, man. We were in tears on the phone. And to Adrian's credit, man, this chokes me up when I think about it. Adrian Wilson came out after we released him, and he said, I knew Steve Keim was the right man for the job because he was strong enough to release a player like me when he needed to. Mm. And, man, that chokes me up to think about that. Mm. And what does that say about Adrian Wilson's character?
Says a ton, which is why I'm sure you're glad he's sitting down next to you in your building helping build what you guys are trying to do there.
You're exactly right. And why, you know, when you're in the bunker, man, you got to find guys that you can trust and you believe in that sort of life that like that humbling part of looking in the mirror and being honest with yourself. You got guys that are going to speak with conviction and aren't going to sugarcoat anything. And it's not trying to climb the ladder. It's just because they love what they do and they're passionate and they're honest.
Steve, do you think if the cap hadn't shrunk, that Patrick would still be there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that it's hard to say. I mean, I know it's a hypothetical question. He had a great run here, and certainly one of my favorite players that that I've had a relationship with throughout the years here, and really fond of him.
Steve, everybody wants to know what's going to happen with your wide receiver, Mr. Fitzgerald. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, it's funny because I was telling Mark Dalton earlier that I'm sure you'd be the guy that gets the news first. So I was hoping you'd give me a shout when you find out.
All you got to do is pick up that phone and call him.
Yeah. No, we've texted a few times, but he hasn't said anything about his intentions. He's keeping it tight to the vest. But, man, we'll talk about a special guy. I know you guys both have great relationships with him and what he's meant to this organization. And to me personally, he's special.
Do you guys want him back?
Larry?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Do you think I want snipers outside my house?
Oh, it's for self-preservation purposes, eh, Steve? Hey,
no, I told Larry this. This year when he got tested positive for COVID and he wasn't in the building, I think it was for about 10 days. When he came back, man, I gave him the biggest hug. Like, he just not having him in the building felt so weird, you know, because he's an icon here, and not only that, just the relationship. I mean, he's the most unique person that I've ever met. If somebody asked me who is the most unique person, it's by far him. I mean, I'll get a phone call from him out of the blue, and you know, think what was he calling me about? And he's just calling to say, put you know your son Brady on the phone because it's his 11th birthday. Like, are you kidding me? Like, wow. Do you have somebody that sits beside you and says, now call Trotter, now call Weiss? You know, it's amazing.
He's got a memory that it blows my mind, the stuff that he latches onto and doesn't forget and will pull it out of the air from nowhere. So, yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying there. Steve, I'm curious when it comes to team building, how many of the moves that you make are specific to things you want specifically for your team versus having to match up against those teams in your division in particular? As we all know, the easiest way to the playoffs is to win your division. So when you see a San Francisco or a Seattle or a Rams team, how many of your moves are based on what they're doing as opposed to just maybe what your philosophies are and what you want?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another great question, and it's a balancing act. It's, you know, first goal was every year, win your division, take care of that. And for us, how do we do that? And that's up the middle right now. You know, when you're facing teams like the Rams and the 49ers who have that interior presence that they have. So to be able to acquire Rodney Hudson via trade for me was huge because of his strength, because of his intangibles, because of his smarts and his awareness. And again, when you're going against guys like Aaron Donald and those type of players, you know, you got to be strong inside. And I think that'll give Kyler even more confidence heading into his third season.
Steve, I wanted to switch from personal just for a second, though. There's going to be a push next week at the owners' meeting or a proposal that talks about limiting hiring of head coaches until, after the Super Bowl. Good or bad, what do you think about that?
It's another one that I've mauled over and over because, you know, you want guys to have opportunities. Yet at the same time, it's like, in some respects, like talking about a player under contract. Like, you can't, you know, he's under contract. So, you know, you're protecting your organization. But at the same time, again, it's more of a personal thing that you're trying to allow people to better themselves. Is it a distraction? I don't know if it's a distraction or not. I've gone both ways on that. So I know I'm not giving you a great answer. Because I think that you could probably argue both sides in some ways.
What do you think? If you had to vote on it, what would you do?
You guys are trying to make headlines.
No. I'm generally, it's not about making headlines. I'm generally interested in whether you think that delaying the process for interviewing people is really going to help level this playing field a little bit, where, because you know what the numbers are from a diverse standpoint in terms of hirings. Right. I'm just curious if you feel it'll level the playing field to do it that way.
I think it's like scouting players. The more opportunities you have to see players, or the more opportunity that people have to talk to coaches, I think it certainly increases chances. Because it's like the more you see players, or the more you have access to colleges, the more you'll probably like players. That's what I've always felt like. And that's why I've always been disappointed when some colleges, restrict our access. The more I see them, the more I know about them, generally the more I'm going to like them. And that could be the same way with coaches. But we definitely have to do a better job overall, for diversity and that sort of thing. And I'm particularly proud of this organization, the steps that we've taken. And, you know, I think also, you know, developing people like we just talked about, Adrian Wilson and Quentin Harris, who's my vice president of player personnel, two guys that I think are certainly going to be general managers in this league and have a great amount of talent in the personnel side. We just recently named both those guys vice presidents. And for me to sit and see how much they've grown is really makes me proud. And we have to challenge ourselves even more to pay it forward. You know, one thing that I feel like you guys have asked what I've learned about myself, you know, maybe earlier on in my career as a GM, maybe I was a little more selfish. I don't want to be too hard on myself from that standpoint, but I'm saying that I've put more effort and emphasis in trying to develop those guys and pay it forward because it's important to me, you know, and I think that we all have to do a better job in that area. And that's something I'm proud of, is taking the time to spend with them. And, you know, unless you try to develop these guys or put them in the pipeline, you'll never know.
Speaking of development, Steve, you know, Kyler Murray, we saw some of the growth, but then we saw what happened on the back half of last season. And in watching a lot of your games, to me, it seemed like the shoulder really impacted his play a little bit in terms of play calling, not running him as much and things like that. How badly was he actually hurt?
You know, Kyler's a tough guy, so I don't think anybody will really ever know. I mean, obviously your trainer gives you a report, but Kyler's one of those people that always wants to play through any kind of bumps and bruises. I'm not sure. I agree with you a little bit that you know, there was a point in time where he definitely had to protect himself a little more. But I think he is just going to continue to take off and ascend the more football he plays. A lot of times, you know, we don't talk enough about how he really didn't have an off season in college. He played baseball, so he didn't have that development time at the college level. And he really, you know, you look at the extent of time that he played, it's that year at Oklahoma. So he's just scratching the surface to me and what he can truly be in this league.
Steve, what is an off season going to do for him?
You know, I just think it's with young quarterbacks in particular, the comfort level in an offense, the command, and more than anything, processing and seeing the field, you know, seeing NFL defenses, seeing a mixture of what they do schematically. And the more you see, you know, obviously that'll be in his Rolodex in his mind, and he'll be able to revert back to seeing different coverages and the way he reacts to things. But he is a football junkie. He loves it. I mean, you know, you get texts from him about guys in the draft, and I eat that stuff up because it shows me how vested he is in what we're doing as an organization.
He's such a quiet guy. How much have you had to talk to him in terms of leadership, connecting with your teammates, and maybe having to step outside of your comfort zone a little bit?
Yeah.
In terms of making those relationships,
we've had a few discussions, and I think it's more about instilling confidence in him to know, like, this is your team. You know, sometimes guys come in at a young age and you have Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson and guys who have been a fixture in the building for a long time. And maybe at times you take a back seat and let them sort of drive the bus. But wanted to let him know that this is your bus, and, you know, have the confidence that you can speak up and you can do those sort of things as a leader, because regardless of whether it's your first year in the league or your 10th year in the league, make no mistake, you're running this offense.
Steve, I want to kind of get to you now, the where you are, you're in the draft. You're in the evaluation process of these collegiate players. And just how different is it when you're thinking this time last year, you can't get on campus, right? You're not having pro days in person. You're not seeing this. And now you're actually getting eyewitness accounts, right? You're sitting there, you can talk to these guys, you can get the eye test on them. How different is that? And how important is it when seeing that, you know, some of these guys are COVID opt-outs or maybe didn't play against the best competition because they played against teams that had COVID opt-outs. So how important is, I guess, the year after, the year later, in terms of you finding the proper players for what you guys want to do?
Well, you know, last year, the obstacles that were created because of COVID, actually, there were some things that, you know, when you, you know, I became open-minded about the process. Really, we learned some things that we continue to use, particularly with the virtual world and the access that we can have to players through calls like this. But there's no doubt when you see them in person, you, as they say, smell their breath. You're on campus. You can talk to the janitor. You can talk to the secretary about the kind of person they are, because that's, to me, what it's all about. You know, these guys all have a skill set that you can see on tape. But to be good or to be great, the difference is their passion, their love, their character. And, you know, so to be able to get out and see them in person, it's almost like, you know, you went from not breathing to breathing. I know that's extreme, but it's like you got to have, as a scout, I've always said, when you walk away from that school and you have that intimate knowledge and feel from the school and being there in person, it's a lot different from me watching six games in my office.
Hey, quickly, when you did a virtual interview, and this is a question I wanted to ask other people. Have you ever, like, let's say you call up a prospect or whatever, and the dude is, like, laying in bed, like, eating a bag of, like, Doritos or something, or were they always, like, on point and ready to rock and roll?
I'm not going to say who it is, but I just had one a couple weeks ago. Guy was, like slumped down. He was, like, eating peanuts, and then he was messing with his hair, and I was like, are you kidding me? And this is a job interview. It's like, do you guys remember the what was it, Goodwill Hunting, when Ben Affleck put his legs up and was like talking to the guy about hiring him, and he told him it was going to take like $80 in cash or something like that.
So you're pulling out these pop culture references on me, Steve. You know I don't do those. So I something I do want to ask you about, and it's more serious. You talk about the difficulties of the job. When you drafted Josh Rosen, and then to come back a year later and make that decision that you were going to move on, and we're talking about a top 10 pick here, can you take the audience through how difficult a decision that is, knowing what you feel is right, but also knowing what you had invested in the first place to get him?
Yeah, and a number of things. I mean, number one, it's you having that struggle with yourself saying, was I wrong? You know, that's a guy that we spent the 10th pick in the draft on, as well as your wallet. It doesn't make a lot of owners happy when you're moving on from a guy that you selected 10th overall the year before. But at the same time, you know, to have a guy like Kyler Murray, who I thought at the time, you know, generational talent, it's kind of like, you know, if you took Clyde Drexler with the first overall pick, and then, you know, Michael Jordan's there with the third pick, you know, do you not take him because he had Clyde Drexler? No disrespect to him, but if you think that's truly in your heart of heart what you believe, you got to roll with it. And that's, man, it is a really tough decision.
And Steve, tell the people, this wasn't something that you went in saying right away, Kyler's my guy.
I didn't want to like him. I didn't. And I know I've told you this before. I delayed watching him until after the combine. And there was already, you know, just because the Cliff relationship and knowing him that long and what he said in a college interview, that there was already a perception. I hadn't even watched him yet. So I just had to be honest to the process and say, regardless of what you see, because generally if you have a bad attitude going into it, it's probably not going to be good. And I just said, you got to be honest. And this is a tough decision. I hope I never have the number one pick again. Matter of fact, if I have the number one pick, I probably won't be making that decision. So you got to do what you think is going to propel your organization sort of the fastest. And that was an area, and I think it was the right decision.
Oh, there's no question. It was the right decision.
Yeah, it was the right. Well, and also, Steve, props for the Clyde Drexler drop. I mean, for all the old school hoopers, Clyde Drexler was that dude, but MJ was really that dude. So that was a very good comp right there.
What was it, Phi Slamma Jamma? Was that
Phi Slamma Jamma? Him, you know him, and Hakeem Olajuwon.
You know who beat him, right?
Wait, I was at the game. Oh,
here
wait.
We go.
North Carolina State. There he goes. Derek Wittenberg, right?
That's right.
Jimmy V still looking for somebody to hug, man. Yeah, man. He's up in heaven looking for someone to hug, man.
Hey, but Steve, you know, since we're kind of on this, like the evaluating of young quarterbacks, and we're seeing, like right now, people saying, okay, the Jets may move off of Darnold or Miami and Tua, and then all these people may trade up to try to get into the top five to get the four quarterbacks who are there. Mm-hmm. What is the hardest part about saying we're going to take that risk or we're going to move off of somebody, you know, when you're seeing all of the stuff that we're hearing about the top end of the draft this year, pretty much the top end of every draft, but again, moving off of a Sam Darnold or someone like that to get another young player where there's a little bit of uncertainty. I mean, what are some of the decisions you go through in your head since you've personally kind of been through it?
The inexact science that the NFL draft is, and that's just – whether it's history or analytics studies, it just tells you that you miss. We miss a lot. We miss a lot more than you would like to admit. And to miss potentially a second time is catastrophic. If you think about it, if you want moved on from a guy who was a first round pick a year or two or three ago, whatever it is, and then you take another one with the first pick in the draft, and that guy doesn't pan out. I mean, it's catastrophic. It would set an organization back. I don't know how long.
One player also. Well, a couple of things I want to talk to you real quick. Your D front. You know, we talk about J.J. Watt, and we talk about what he can do with Chandler Jones. But you guys brought back Marcus Golden, and I don't think people realize like how impactful of a player Marcus Golden has been. I mean, and then you know you've got Isaiah Simmons from last year, and kind of the hybrid role, but he really started to settle in towards the end of the year. What do you think that some of the personnel additions that you guys have made and then like the experience that someone like Simmons can do for your defense to really continue to kind of grow and play up to its potential?
Right. I think the great thing is there's a mixture of guys that play hard to guys with length and athleticism. And the one thing that as you said, Marcus Golden, he's so passionate. I mean, you love the way he plays really with a high motor and physical. And then you throw in Chandler Jones, who is so gangly and unorthodox, yet, you know, I think since 2012, the two guys who've led the NFL in sacks is number one, Chandler Jones, and I think number two, J.J. Watt. So I think having those guys on the field at the same time is going to pose some problems. Now you have a guy at the second level who can not only blitz, he can cover, he can do it all. And Isaiah Simmons, you know, with his speed, Vance Joseph likes to call him an eraser, which is an interesting description of what all he can do, you know, for defense with his ability to cover ground and close on the perimeter on run plays. And, again, just the flexibility that he gives Vance to do different things schematically.
Steve, I've got two questions for you. Number one, where on this team – are you still looking? Are you most concerned about what position are you most concerned about going forward?
Well, on paper, it's easy to say corner. I would right. think, you know, and with Patrick going to the Vikings, you know, you're looking at the guys on the roster right now. Byron Murphy, who we drafted in the second round, who I think is an excellent player. The question is you know, is he a better inside player as a nickel or you know, is he can do it both really, but. You know, you have to. We have to add some bodies to that room. And the one thing you got to do is just stay patient. You know, we added Antonio Cromartie years ago, late in the process, and he became a Pro Bowler that year opposite Pat. Certainly helps to have the rush that we'll hopefully have, and sort of what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, the guys with their hand in the dirt certainly come first, and it makes those guys on the back end jobs a little easier.
Secondly, Steve, we both know these TV deals are going to kick in a couple of years. You have a guy named Chandler Jones whose deal is coming up soon.
Yeah.
Are they trying to slow play it or are you trying to get this done quickly before that money kicks in?
Chandler, man, he is a phenomenal player and a great person. And again, the statistics speak for itself. So you know, it's good to have those sort of problems. I told John Schneider years ago when they won the Super Bowl, all those guys were trying to get paid. And I said, man, you got champagne problems. That's good when Jason Light's going through it now. How do I pay all these guys?
You didn't answer my question, Steve. You
have those problems.
You know, you didn't answer my question.
Oh, are we trying to slow play it?
Or no, I know they probably would want to slow play it, but are you guys trying to get this thing done soon, something soon with Chandler?
Man, I swear I have not even had a chance to come up for air to even point in that direction. So I would say, we'll start having some conversations here in the near future.
I got you.
All right, see, better offseason mathematics, Buccaneers or Saints?
In terms of
finding ways to get under the cap, re-sign guys.
Well, I got to stick with Jason White. That's my guy.
Okay.
And Mike Greenberg. Yeah, Mike Greenberg, their cap guy. Those guys have had to become creative, that's for sure. And again, problems I would certainly like to have.
You know, the one thing I got to know from Steve before we leave, man, what are you wearing opening week? This is one of the sharpest dressed dudes out there.
He's clean.
When it comes to GMs, I got to know what you're wearing.
Coming from you two, that's a lot of love. I mean, I think I've seen you guys both rock probably a nice plaid or something. Certainly got to have a little red, maybe some red in the stitching that pops.
All right. Oh, you say that with so much gusto, Steve.
I know, he does. I know. I want to know how far out you plan your attire, Steve, for Sunday. And don't tell me you wake up Sunday morning and just pull something out.
Probably a couple days. Larry messes with me all the time because we have the same girl, Chandra, who makes our suits. And he always gives me a hard time whether I'm either the second or third best dressed in just the building, or then a couple years ago he told me I was the second best dressed GM behind Thomas Dimitroff.
Yeah, really? About it. Nobody was taking the crown from TD. Nobody was taking the crown.
I don't know, man. Steve's pretty clean. Steve is clean.
I think it's his slender look just looks better than mine does in a suit.
Is that what it is?
I don't know. Whenever I walk in that building, I see Steve. It's like, damn, I got to up my game a little bit here.
That's what I was thinking actually on the way down here when Mark brought me down. I was thinking, man, I don't have like a sport jacket or something because I know my guys are going to be clean on the other end.
No.
Hoodied up.
Not for this, my friend. Not for this.
Hey, that's Steve, the one thing about COVID world. It's definitely relaxed some things. I don't think the suit business is doing as well.
Suit makers are the ones who are probably hurting more than anybody, any high fashion design folks.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, we know you got to get out of here. Jim will call you when Larry decides what he wants to do.
Perfect.
And we'll talk after that.
Sounds good, man.
You guys are wrong, man. But I appreciate you always, Steve, man.
Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you, Steve.
The great work, man.
All right, guys.
You know, Steve, Steve Keim is one of those guys that again, I just love talking to because he shoots you straight, but you can have fun with him as well. And one of the things he said there that I think is so true in terms of self-reflection and whatnot, you can come at Steve and say, man, you know, you messed this up, or how did you miss on this? And he's not that guy that's going to take it so personal, where some of these guys, you point out one of their mistakes and they don't want to talk to you anymore. Steve is like, if you come at him with an honest evaluation, he's willing to have that dialogue. You know, he's not so thin skinned that he's going to, you know, put you on that list and, you know, all of a sudden you're blocked and no more conversations. But I respect that about him. And I do mean, and I do think, and Thomas Dimitroff can get mad at me about this, I do think Steve Keim gives Thomas Dimitroff a run for the number one best dressed executive in the NFL.
He gives him a run, and now it's Steve's, since Thomas is out of the game for at least this season. I really thought when you asked the question about philosophically, what are you trying to do? He's like, we got to get better guard to guard, right? We got to get better on the offensive interior when you're facing guys like Aaron Donald and the Eric Armsteads of the world, you know, who are coming at you. And so he gets it. I mean, that's one thing that they, you know, ever since Mike Iupati, really, they had not addressed for a couple of years. They hit some other spots. So now they're going there. And the fact is that they got to get a corner, which they absolutely do. You lose a great player like Patrick Peterson. they've got to fortify some things, especially now that DeSean Jackson is in that Rams offense. And we know the smoke that the Seahawks are bringing with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on those sides as well. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy, you know, Steve. And it's going to be interesting to see how they go about procuring things and they move forward with some things.
I'll say this to you, Steve. The happiest guy in the Cardinals organization, in my opinion, is Vance Joseph. Because when he first got there, they did not have the pieces to be successful defensively. They tried to add a little bit last year, got a little better. And now look at what he has to work with. You get a healthy Chandler Jones coming back, J.J. Watt. You keep Marcus Golston. You've got Isaiah Simmons, who should develop in year two. You got Buda Baker, one of the best safeties in the game. At every level of that defense now, he should have playmakers. And if they go out and they take care of themselves at corner, that's a unit that's going to do some things. And it's going to have to do some things in the division that it's in. So I'm willing to wager that Vance Joseph has a very wide smile on his face as they head towards the draft.
Yeah, you know, Jim, they enhanced the physicality. And Steve talked about it a little bit. They had to get more physical. Because you look at the defenses in this division. I mean, the Rams, I mean, they got everybody trying to break you off. Right? I mean, everybody on their team comes at you head hunting. Seahawks still kind of figured some things out. They're hot and cold. But San Francisco, you know they're going to be back. You know, D'Amico Ryans and then the players that they've added and that they've been able to manage, getting back from injuries. So they're going to be back. So good for them. You know, so Jim, we also know Steve is out, you know, procuring talent. And as part of something we do here in trying to amplify HBCUs, Black College Football Hall of Fame, of which I'm on the selection committee, we're going to be staging the Legacy Bowl the Saturday after the Super Bowl. And the only reason we say the Saturday after the Super Bowl is we're expecting it to be a 17-game season until the Super Bowl date has not officially been set yet. That's the only reason we're phrasing it like that. But, you know, the reason why Doug Williams and James Shaq Harrison's guys felt that this was important to get an all-star game together, to get all these scouts to come look at these guys before the combine, is a lot of these guys aren't going to get invited to the combine. They're not getting invited to the Senior Bowl. But this is a way to find somebody who's maybe a fifth-round draft pick or a seventh-round draft pick to help. And, again, I think it's important that people understand there's still some talent at these HBCUs, as we're seeing at Jackson State with Deion Sanders is bringing into town. But to get them in front of eyes, I think, is just so important, especially after so many of these teams didn't have a COVID season, you know, a truncated COVID season, and they didn't have spring ball in 2020 for these scouts to come see them, at least in the developmental stage of their career.
Yeah, for me, Steve, it's about one thing in one word, and it's opportunity. And that's all these players ever ask for, nothing else. Just can they have an opportunity to be seen and to make their way? And so I applaud Shaq and Doug and everyone else involved with the Black College Football Hall of Fame and the NFL for helping with this because it's needed, you know? And these young men have dreams as well as everyone else. And if they can just get an opportunity, you know, you run with it. You make it do what it does, you know, or as Ray Charles would say, make it do what it do, you know,
make it do what it do,
you know? So I think it's tremendous and props to those guys for helping to get that off the ground.
Well, we're going to continue to amplify HBCUs, HBCU sports, HBCU athletics, women's athletics. Thank you, women of the NCAA, March Madness, for stepping up and exposing some of the inequities. It's a shame it had to come to that. Proud of you for stepping up. And hopefully things can get better from here because this is absolutely kind of ironic. All right, Jim, let's go ahead and get out of here. We're not done with the GM train on the Huddle and Flow this week. We're going to have Brandon Bean of the Buffalo Bills on a little bit later in the week also because the Bills have a real interesting proposal for the competition committee about slowing down the head coaching hiring process. So we'll talk to him about that. But it's going to be a busy week as we kind of move towards a draft here on the Huddle and Flow, Jim.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. I've got some thoughts on it. We'll save it until then. But for now, we want to thank you all for continuing to subscribe, continuing to listen. And we implore you to keep leaving us messages, letting us know who you want to hear from, what you want to hear about. And that way, we can continue to give you more of what you're funking for.
And don't think we don't read those comments. We get on iTunes, we get on Spotify, we get on iHeart, and we look at what you're saying, and we appreciate the love. I mean, it's fantastic to see that we're actually giving you guys something that you want that you didn't have. And as Jim said the other day on the podcast, it feels good to know that you were right when we proposed this podcast a couple years ago, and here we are. All right. For Jim Trotter, for Thomas Warren, I am Steve Weich with the Huddle and Flow podcast, brought to you by Intuit, proud makers of TurboTax, QuickBooks, and Mint. We will be back a little bit later, but for now, we are the HU Mob, and we are out.